Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Gary Ramsey, who's an Alexander Technique teacher and a voice and speech teacher who heads the voice department at the Neighborhood Playhouse School of the Theater in New York City. And he has recently written a book titled Bliss, One Hero's Journey, about the deadly predicament he faced in the summer of 2015 and how the Alexander Technique inspired him through all of his experiences after that. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Robert. It's great to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. Before we get into your story, could you give our listeners a very brief description or definition of the Alexander Technique?
Yes. For me, the Alexander Technique is really about the a happy connection between the mind and the body. And that as we go through our lives doing our day-to-day activities, whether it be, you know, sitting, standing, working, cutting something at a counter, that how we are implementing the connection between the mind and the body really has a greater effect on how our life unfolds as we go through our day, one of more efficiency or one of less efficiency, which makes us, you know, a much more happier whole person when we're more efficient and a less happy or whole person when we are inefficient. So that's kind of my basic premise for the work.
Right. And I think for those listeners who have perhaps just heard about the Alexander Technique or maybe had a few lessons at some point in their lives, they probably identify it as being something useful for people with poor posture or coordination or people suffering from back pain or neck pain, that kind of thing. And I think the kind of way you will talk about how you've used it in that particular situation that you found yourself in might seem like an unusual use of the technique. So listeners, if you're in that situation, be prepared.
Yes.
So Gary, could you start at the beginning of what happened, and as you go along, you'll talk a little bit about how the technique helped you get to the next step, I guess would be one way of putting it.
I had had kind of a rare situation in that I wasn't experiencing many symptoms of anything, but I was not feeling completely well. And I had to go in for a series of tests, as we all know, those people who have been ill. And when I got to the doctor's office for my diagnosis, he looked at me and very solemnly said, "You could die at any minute," which I thought was a joke. Even right there at that very moment, once I realized he was absolutely serious, which, to be honest, I had never heard of a diagnosis like that in my life.
Right.
I've you know, people get 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
But any minute was just a bit much. The first thing I did was I applied my Alexander directions. Right. I literally sat in that chair and I really organized myself and I really prepared myself to take in what this doctor was about to explain to me. And basically, that is what I did. And then I looked at him and I said, "How is that possible?" And he went on, of course, to explain. So the crux of it was that I had kidney cancer, renal cell cancer, although he told me that was not the problem. He said, as a matter of fact, renal cell cancer was the least of my problems, because he said I had a deadly tumor. And what I didn't know, there are deadly tumors in cancer that can cause the person to suffer an aneurysm at any moment, which was what my situation actually was. And I had one of the more deadly ones, and it was in a horrific place. And he said, "I honestly am shocked that you're alive at this moment." So again, I really had to keep control of myself, both my emotions, my awareness, my body, my breathing, mm-hmm. all of the aspects that we really deal with in an Alexander lesson. And I did ask him, I said, well, you know, because I thought, well, I'm an Alexander teacher, right? So I said, well, how about if I use myself well, if I keep this very calm? He said, look, it doesn't matter. He said, you could be sound asleep in a bed and it could shatter. This aneurysm could occur. He said, so there's nothing I can really tell you. Things became bleaker when he made it clear to me that the only possibility was surgery, but these surgeries were very, very tricky. They have a poor success rate. I didn't have many options as far as hospitals. So it became bleaker and bleaker, and the bleaker it became, the more I kept breathing, applying my directions, mm-hmm. and really staying as calm as possible. Because the one thing I don't know much about aneurysms, to be perfectly honest, not at that time, I do now.
Right.
But the one thing I knew is that getting hysterical was not going to help the situation.
Right. Well, that is a useful piece of information in that circumstance, isn't it?
It truly is. And I did become much more aware of how I was utilizing myself. And then right there, because I was remaining very pretty, I would say really calm, I did, in a sense, ask him for my medical records, which did turn out to be a saving grace. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it at the time. As a matter of fact, I even kind of got angry with myself. I thought, why did I do that? Because the doctor has the records. Any hospital would contact him. Mm-hmm. But I did, in fact, ask for the printed records. I left the office, and I have to say, once I got out of the office, I even felt more expanded and free within my body. And that was truly a significant moment. I remember really how beautiful the day was. And I was walking very beautifully, very gracefully, because I thought, well, this could be my last walk, so I may as well make it a good one.
Right.
And what I did was, is I went to this beautiful park that was not even a half a block away from the facility. And I just sat there, and I realized that anybody, anywhere could die at any minute. Mm-hmm. And how was I going to proceed with this? But the comforting part was I realized in a sense that we all are potentially could die, even a child, even a baby, an infant. I mean, God knows, you know, mm-hmm. we've heard about these horrible things. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, how am I going to do this? Am I going to do it in a beautiful, easeful, graceful manner, living according to the principles that I believe in with the Alexander, or am I going to be hysterical and a deranged madman? Mm-hmm. And I really decided that I was going to go according to the principles that I've lived my life by. So that was a huge shift. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I believe, because I really stayed with myself, I really kind of took care of this tumor in a sense. I felt like, and I kind of refer to this in my book, that I felt like I had a baby inside of me. It's just that my baby was deadly. So I called it Rosemary's baby. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to take care of it. I wanted to take care of not only me, like a mother would take care of herself during a pregnancy, but I wanted to take care of the baby as well as a mother would do during a pregnancy. And that is exactly how I proceeded and utilized these principles to the best of my ability. I have to say things weren't always easy going. There was always a crisis that arose, as there is in our life, mm-hmm. When something occurs. But inhibiting that startle response, and you know, those of you that are familiar with the startle response, where we go into a fight or flight reflex, to just pause, as we often do in Alexander, and to really reorganize and breathe and really utilize myself in a better manner was absolutely life-saving. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the best thing I could have done.
Could you say a little bit about the process you use for those listeners who, when you say use the technique to reorganize yourself, could you say mm-hmm. a little bit about how you did that?
Yes.
What your thought process was?
So when something would occur, so for example, the diagnosis I've just spoken about, I'm sitting in a chair at the time, which I think was a lucky event, and I immediately allowed my spine to be much freer. I allowed my head to float more at the top of my body. I allowed the outer world to penetrate and come more into me. And I really slowed down my breath, and I didn't allow my mind, this was always a big one for me, I didn't allow my mind to go out of the moment. I didn't rush to the future, and I didn't freak out about what he had just said in the past. I remained in the present. Mm-hmm. And I allowed my mind to process and then come out with its response, which at the doctor's office, the first response was, how is that possible? And that is what I came out with.
So that idea, just again for our listeners, that idea of being in the present is, of course, a key element of the technique, even for such relatively mundane things as posture, coordination, movement through space. Correct. And you're taking that same process and simply applying it to a far more dramatic, emotion-laden bit of news that entered your life, right?
Yes.
Right.
And because of this situation, and remember, this went on for a long time, where I was walking around being told basically that I could die at any minute, I realized that every moment in our life, it doesn't matter what we're doing. We could be washing a dish, mm-hmm. or we could be, about to, you know, give the biggest speech, greatest speech of our life. We could be the president, whatever. Mm-hmm. They are all of them crucial in our lives. There is no more important or less important moments. And what I started to find, because I could die at any moment, I thought, oh my God, they're all perfect. They're all important. They're all beautiful. Why don't I treat them with the same reverence? Why don't I also be as present and as beautifully accepting and organized of them while I'm going through them? And it really, I have to say, the cancer experience, although it was deadly and many people would think of it as horrific, it brought me to a closer understanding of the Alexander technique, because before I had the idea that there are more important things that the technique is for as opposed to not important things. And when you can die at any minute, everything's important. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a moment to look to waste or to blow off or to be frivolous with. There wasn't a second. And that was profound. That was absolutely a profound moment. And now I live so much closer with the marriage between the technique and my life than I did before the cancer.
And I assume the marriage, as it were, of mind and body.
Absolutely.
Which is kind of a key element of the technique.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you got the diagnosis, you went to the park.
Right.
And what happened after that? We could maybe just go through the rest of your story.
Sure. The events unfolded, and again, I believe because I stayed present with myself, mm-hmm. the events unfolded miraculously. And crazy little things, like I had a memory about Farrah Fawcett before she died of cancer being flown to Germany. And I thought, oh my God, I remembered at the time I was confused about that, and somebody told me Germany had the top cancer treatments in the world. So that day, right after the diagnosis, within an hour and whatever, I flew up the stairs and I started researching Germany. Mm-hmm. And through that research, I found a hospital in Mexico that treated unusual situations such as mine. So I called, and sure enough, I got somebody on the phone who said, you know, I told her my diagnosis. She said, yes, we're very aware of these tumors. We deal with them all the time. And I said, well, they're telling me they're deadly and I could die at any minute. And she said, yes, in the United States, that's true. She said, but here we look at them from a different perspective. And I was just floored because I said, a different perspective? She said, yes, we just don't see them as deadly because we treat them in a different way. And I said, well, what is your success rate? And she said, well, we have a much higher success rate due to that fact. So it was these miracles coming up that not only made me feel more confident and secure, but also kept me moving in that direction of staying with myself, of being centered, of being present in the moment, of applying my principles as I went through them. And then I found out that they did pre-treatments. One of the things about these tumors is pre-treatments are vital. Here in the States, they don't do pre-treatments. So anyway, then I had to fly to Mexico. Of course, flying is dangerous for aneurysms. Mm-hmm. But I was given instructions on how to handle that. Mm-hmm. I had my first big emergency when the plane got into trouble. I was actually napping at the time, and we had a drop, a kind of serious, we hit some kind of big turbulence, and I actually thought the tumor had shattered on the plane. And once again, and I write about this in the book, I literally applied my directions. I literally got in control of my moment. I didn't let the moment overwhelm me. I didn't let my emotions run away with my mind-body connection. And as you can tell from this interview, everything turned out great.
Either you or a clone are speaking to me now.
One or the other. Yeah. So throughout the entire situation, I continued to do that. And I found, you know, it to be spectacular in the results. Mm-hmm. And my keeping my levity, keeping my positivity, even though I accepted that I could die, and even in Mexico, they said, you know, yes, we have better odds here, but there's still a chance that you could die. So, of course, I needed to have a family member out there for my surgery. They weren't worried about me dying before the surgery, but the surgery was still iffy because of, as some of you may know, the pictures of scans and all of the things that they do to you, you know, are not 100% accurate, that there are things they don't see. So I had to sign off on that. I had a family member, my lovely sister came out, and it just went spectacularly. So spectacularly that even they were amazed. The tumor, and I wanted to say this, I really did a lot of Alexander on my tumor. I literally fought and organized my tumor, and I talked to it. I guess maybe similar as a woman might talk to her baby while she's pregnant. I don't know. But that I talked to it, and I comforted it, and I told it to, please, we want you to get smaller. We want you to be calm. We don't want you to get all upset and go bursting all over my body. And oh my God, the surgeon even said, he said, your tumor came out like a baby.
And wow. I thought,
oh my God, because babies are not attached to anything, as they, you know, when they come out. He said, your tumor did not attach to anything. It just completely, like a beautiful root on a plant. It just came up. It just came out.
Did you make a point of learning exactly in you where it was as part of that?
You mean the tumor itself?
Yeah.
It had gone through the kidney and up into the renal vein.
Right, and you had sort of mapped that yourself on your own.
Correct.
Body.
So I had seen it on the photos, you know, on the pictures that they had shown me. And that's where I got the baby idea. It kind of did look like a little bit of a baby because the kidney kind of was like its torso.
Yeah.
And it had a tumor that looked like a head on it. And then it had another, the one that looked like an arm. And there was another one coming out that looked like a leg. It kind of had like a eerie kind of baby feel to it, which is, I guess, why I came up with the Rosemary's Baby. But just as we use in Alexander images of, you know, like thinking the, I don't know, like the head as being a balloon, a helium balloon or whatever, I used images toward the tumor. The baby image was a big one, and the idea that it was safe. And constantly, instead of thinking a baby getting bigger, I kept thinking of my baby getting smaller. And I was also losing tremendous amounts of weight. So that made sense. And what I guess that's why I liked Rosemary's Baby, because she lost a lot of weight when she was pregnant. So I used those images that were very comforting. And I also, you know, I was surrounded by a lot of people who were very, very ill. And so it was a comforting kind of joke that we would, you know, talk about disease and death in a very different way, because everybody was facing the same issue.
Mm-hmm. So because we're running a little bit towards the end of our time, I assume that everything following that operation has been okay for you. You're functioning
absolutely
well and healthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and you've probably had occasion to use the technique during that period as well, right?
Absolutely, because when I came back, I was only about 140 pounds, a lot of muscle loss. So I went back to work within 6 weeks from the date of my diagnosis until the day I was back at work was actually 7 weeks. It was a little short of seven.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I was back to my schedule,
right,
and really had to apply the principles on a much deeper level because of the weakness in my body. But it went beautifully well.
So you kind of had to regrow yourself, but you did it in a directed way.
Exactly.
So, you know, go ahead.
No, and I really did use myself so that the growth of me coming back, the weight and the muscle coming back, would even be better than the muscle and the weight that I had before the cancer.
Right, right.
And
so
it was.
I want to ask you a question about the role of the technique in all of this that's a little bit different, and maybe this would be our final question and answer.
Sure.
It seems to me that the technique might, having the experience you've had with the technique all those years before, and knowing from that, for example, a lot of conventional ideas about how to improve your posture and so on are not terribly effective. Alexander has a very different view of that.
Yes.
That might have been of some help initially in being prepared to not ignore the diagnosis you got, but to be willing to entertain alternative takes on things. Because I do think a lot of people faced with what that doctor told you would just, what they would focus on is getting their, you know, final life together, getting their papers organized, whatever, right?
Yes.
Cleaning up whatever messes there were. Whereas you took it in a direction of, well, I'm going to explore another alternative.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I really do owe that to the technique, because it kept me in the openness and the availability to really see those options. Because as I met people on my journey at the clinic, there's a lot of people that are just running around in terror, and they can't see any option. It could be right in front of them and they don't see it. It's like the person mad looking for their car keys, and they're right there, but they don't see them.
Or the person on a very mundane level, relatively speaking, also, who thinks the solution to their back pain's a different chair.
Correct.
And not something within them.
Correct.
Yeah.
And people look to the outer as opposed to going to the inner. And I went to the inner, and that was the saving grace.
Wow. Well, let's end our conversation on that note.
All right.
I would like to I'll just say that your book, Bliss, One Hero's Journey, is of course available on Amazon, and there's been a lot of very good reaction to it. I have to say I haven't read it, but I will.
Okay.
But I've talked
Okay.
to a number of people who have, and they are universally recommending it to other people.
Yes, I've got
Not
enough.
just in the Alexander world. Of course, you're sort of famous now in the Alexander world, but just people in general have reacted very well to it.
Yes.
So if what we've been talking about intrigues you, get a copy.
Thank you.
Gary Ramsey is the author, and the title of the book is Bliss,
Yes,
One
on
Hero's
Amazon.
Journey. It's on Amazon. It's probably at your bookstore. Do you teach individual students Alexander Technique as
Yes,
well
I
as the
do.
voice work?
My full-time teaching is done at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York City,
Great.
but I do have private clients as well.
Well, if you're in the New York area, I will put a link. You have a website, right?
I do have a website, yes.
I think I saw it. I'll put a link to Gary's website by the interview, and you can contact him there. And I suppose there might be some people who would contact you for kind of medical advice, in a sense.
That's happening a lot now since
Yeah,
the,
so you're gonna have to deal with that.
yes.
Anyway, Gary, thank you so much for
Oh,
this.
thank you, Robert. This was wonderful.